D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen, and David Janes here with you. The Predators are back in action tonight at the New Jersey Devils. Puck drop at 6, pregame at 5 right here on 102.5 The Game. So let's go to our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Elliot Freeman, Sportsnet NHL insider, who is presented each week by Old National Bank. Get old. Hi, Elliot. How are you?
I'm old. How are you guys?
We're doing well, trying to stay warm down here in frigid Nashville. So the Predators play the Devils tonight, but I want to ask you first about the Predators' previous opponent, the Boston Bruins, because I was thinking about something as I was watching the game between the teams the other night. Last season, the Bruins were big sellers at the trade deadline, shipping out Brad Marchand, Brandon Carlo, Charlie Coyle, others. How were they able to rebound so quickly this season after shedding so many top players? And what could the Predators perhaps learn from what the Bruins did last year as they approached the trade deadline?
Well, I think one of the things that happened last year was, number one, Jeremy Swayman, their goalie, was just coming off a brutal contract dispute. And he didn't show up until right around, it was during training camp, and he just never recovered. That was one of the big sources of their issues. It would be as if, for the Predators, Saros had a contract dispute that dragged into training camp, and he was just never okay all year. And this year Swayman came back. He was focused. He was ready. And he's had a great year. That's one key thing. They had some bad injuries on the blue line. McAvoy and Lindholm, two of their best defensemen, got hurt. McAvoy didn't play again after being at the Four Nations, where he got hurt, and that really took them down. And I think that those were a lot of the reasons that they had issues. And, I think guys had bad years. Like, all of that stuff combined together. This year, Swayman focused on hockey. Zadorov has had a really good year after a really rocky first season. They're healthier. But I think one of the things that they also did, Adam, was that when they made trades last year, they got young players who were ready to play in the NHL. They didn't just get picks and prospects. And if you take a look at the depth of their roster, like, they have players there like Fraser Minton, who they got from the Toronto Maple Leafs, and Murat Husnadinov, who they got from Minnesota, who were maybe guys who weren't either in their previous team's lineups. Maybe their previous team didn't think as highly of them. Maybe they were squeezed out. But when they got traded there, they found roles. And their players in Boston. Like, for example, I'll give you another example. They have a guy who was in the American Hockey League for Toronto named Alex Steeves. He was a really good AHL player, but the Maple Leafs never really thought that he was a fit for them. And Boston signed him, and now he's playing a role for them as one of their forwards. They just signed a 2-year extension. And Adam, I one of the things I really find in this league is that pro scouting really matters. Who is a guy who is not fitting in another organization who can fit in with you? Like, who are those guys? Who can you find that's not fitting in elsewhere? And suddenly he comes to your team and he becomes a factor. And that's one of the things that Boston did. They found guys.
Regarding young players who could fit in with other organizations, Elliot, there is one player rumored to be available who could fit that criteria, and that's Shane Wright, the 22-year-old center from Seattle, the number 4 overall pick in 2022. Why is he seemingly on the outs in Seattle, and what could the Kraken want in a trade for Wright?
Well, I'll answer the second part first, Adam. They're looking to hit a home run. If they're trading him, they want to hit a home run. Seattle has never had a game breaker. They've never had an elite offensive player. You know, for example, just for argument's sake, I think if Artemi Panarin was interested in the Kraken, and I don't believe he is, but I'm just putting it out there, that is the kind of player that I think Seattle would trade Shane Wright for. But they want an offensive player that makes a difference. They are looking to hit a home run there. That's what they're looking for. The thing about Wright is, you know, he's like the third line center there at best. He is hitting he plays, you know, 14, 15 minutes a night in his best nights most times. He had a game last week where he played nine up. And I think, you know, Adam, another thing we're learning about this league right now is the NHL was always the kind of everybody bends to the conformity of the team league, like guys who didn't really stuck out. And I'm not saying that Wright's a bad guy or he doesn't bend to the conformity of the team, but I do think that when young players now aren't happy with their situations, they're much quicker to act on it than they ever were in the NHL. Like, we've had three players this year, Adam, terminate their contracts to go play other places for less money. Now, one of them who went to Montreal, he just got a new contract, so it worked out for him. But other players are doing this now. When players are not happy, they're speaking up and forcing their way out more than others, or more than ever. And that's one thing that's happening with Wright.
Elliot Freeman, Sportsnet NHL Insider, is with us. Elliot, of course, we're paying attention specifically to the Western Conference wildcard race, because that's where the Predators are in the standings. Which teams do you believe will start separating themselves from that pack? Utah appears to be doing so, but is there anybody else you think in that group, Anaheim, San Jose, LA, Seattle, that is primed to pull away?
You know, I think the challenge that you guys have in your division is that you only have one route, right? You know, like nobody who's in like Utah and the other teams in your division, like if you want to count Chicago and all this, nobody's catching the top three teams. Colorado, Minnesota, Dallas, they're way, way, way too far. It's like I used to play when I was a kid a video game called Pole Position. You aren't catching those teams in pole position. But in the Pacific, you know, because those teams are lower in total points, the teams in that division will have two routes. They'll have the wild card and they'll have the division. I think Anaheim is going to make it. I think Utah is going to make it. Utah's played more games than, you know, the Kings or the Sharks or yourselves or Seattle. I just like their team. I think they play fast. I like their goaltending. I like Anaheim and I like Utah. You know, the rest of the teams, I would like to see if it's not going to be my adopted hometown of Nashville, Adam, I'm going to take San Jose. I'd like to see them make the playoffs. I'd like to see Celebrini make the playoffs. He's the best player on those three teams. I'd love to see him in big games. I think Anaheim gets in. I think Utah gets in. And I'll take the Sharks because I want to see Celebrini get in.
We're talking to Elliot Freeman. Elliot, greetings from New Jersey here as we look on from the Rock, as they like to call it. And I want to ask you about, you just talked about the West, so why don't you hit the East? Because as I look at the standings, for the first time in a good while, there is a little bit of separation, it
would
seem.
There's separation.
Yeah. So you've got some teams that have fallen back by, I don't know, 5 to 8 points, to where it might be a little tougher than it seemed a few weeks ago to catch a Montreal or a Boston teams that have a stranglehold on the Wildcats wildcard spots right now. So how do you think that affects the market as we look ahead?
I think the interesting one's going to be Washington. because I think Washington's in on Panarin, but it has to be with an extension. Like, if you look at Washington right now, they're 6 points out. They're actually closer to third place in their division than they are in the wild card. They're 8 out of the wild card. And I think Washington's a really good team, and I think they would look at Panarin with an extension. So that is one for me. Other than that, you know, about Panarin with the Panthers, I think they're his number one choice. I think that's where he really wants to go. I just have no idea of how the Panthers can make that work. And then the other teams, it's just a matter of, do they become sellers or not? Do they hang on or do they sell? I mean, it's a nightmare. It's really tough for New Jersey. Like, the team you're playing tonight, as disappointing as your start kind of was, like, their season, they started 13-4-1, and they're in 15th place in the 16-team Eastern Conference. Like, this is a really hard year for them. This is a year they were supposed to take a step. And I think that a lot of these teams have big decisions to make about whether or not they wave the white flag or they go for it.
Here's another one that I'm sure is hard for anybody to answer, but you would have really good perspective on this. You were just talking about sometimes, you know, you've got players that want to change the scenery. You've got other times where you get that right guy changing addresses and he fits really well in the next spot. You've got such a shortage of centers around right now. They sent Fedor Svechkov back down to Milwaukee, and I'm sure he's very disappointed for that to happen, but he just has not been super productive. And now you've got another guy in a mix of players that this happens to all teams, several players, even high round picks. They sort of hit a crossroads, and you're not, and you start to wonder how much longer they have in a particular spot. So that dynamic across the lead, Elliot, I think it's an interesting one to follow because some come out of it, they grow out of it, and then others don't.
You know what? I agree with that. You can look, like, there's players that were top picks that will never do it because they can't adjust to a different role. And you'll have other players that were high picks and they accept that, you know what, maybe my ceiling is not where I thought it was, but it is where I can find another role. Like, I can be a third line winger instead of a top scorer. And they accept that they have a bit of a different role. And I think that, you know, I'll give you an example of a guy on your team who I think about with that is McCarron. You know what? McCarron was a first round pick and he was drafted by Montreal. And, you know, he was a guy that people were wondering, when you're a first round pick and you're drafted by Montreal, people are expecting just enormous things from you. And I know, right, he was the 25th overall pick. He's not necessarily a first rounder, and not like a guy who's in the top five or anything. But anytime you're taken in the first round by the Montreal Canadiens, people are like putting you on a pedestal. Like, this is a star. This is a cornerstone. And it didn't work out for him in that way. But I watch McCarron play now and the role that he's accepted, and he's a player. Like, if on a good team, like, good teams need players like him. And he accepts it, and he does it, and he's carved out a role. And, you know, like, I listened to Barry the other day, and I know a lot of the focus is on guys like O'Reilly, and I understand that because they're the sexiest names. But I would bet you that he's got teams calling him about McCarron. What are you doing here with this guy? Because to win a Stanley Cup, you need guys like him and guys who are willing to do the role that he does. So, you know, obviously, when we're talking about Nashville, you guys are wanting to hear about the big names. I would bet you that that's one guy that Trotz knows he can deal if he wants to. And he's probably thinking about it. Do I want to keep him, or am I getting something here that I like? I have to say, I probably bet you too, like another guy like that is Bunting. The Islanders traded for Palat the other day, Andre Palat from New Jersey, where you are. I think they poked around on your guy Bunting. And again, I think Bunting is a guy who can play a little higher in the lineup. He has, and he has with you. He's a pain in the butt, and I say that as a compliment. And I would bet that Barry's getting calls on him too.
It's a great thought, and I want to ask you specifically about that dilemma when it comes to centers, because it's so hard to find centers. As soon as you trade somebody like McCarron or even an Eric Halla, who's done a very nice job, could probably be a nice fit. He's been that guy for many teams before. He's one of the more well-traveled guys. So when you're looking at your pipeline and you don't have maybe Brady Martin needs another year or two, things like that, how do you weigh the dilemma of trading a guy you know you could get some pretty good assets for, but as soon as you trade him, you got to look for somebody that's similar, and those guys are hard to find?
Well, I think one of the things would be for Trotz is, you know, he's had – how long have you guys been looking for centers? So he's
forever.
It's a great point you make, Willie. He's not going to want to create himself another issue. I would say this. I think it comes down to what is the player looking for in terms of an extension. It usually comes down to, does somebody force you to make a decision? Do you get an ask for an extension that you're like, we're not doing that? And then when you negotiate, you sit there and you say, you know what, we don't have a path to a deal here. So that's one. And the other is, okay, what do I think I can get for McCarron? Okay. And these teams, you have an analytics staff, and they'll tell you over the past couple years, this is what a comparable to McCarron was getting in a trade. So generally, you set that as the baseline. As in, let's just say, for argument's sake, it's a second round pick. Let's just say that. Well, if we get a second round pick for McCarron, we got to look at it. And then all of a sudden, if somebody says, you know what, I absolutely have to have this guy, I'm giving you a first, then all of a sudden you're sitting there saying, you know what, we may not get an offer this good. So I think what it comes down to, Willie, if it's either the ask or in terms of salary or the trade return, does somebody force you to make a decision?
Elliot, before we let you go, I am curious about Nazem Kadri. Because as we talk about Ryan O'Reilly and what he could be worth on the trade market, if the Flames move on from Kadri, I think that could provide a blueprint of sorts for Barry Trotz. Now, I know that Kadri has more term on his contract. He's more expensive than Ryan O'Reilly, but they're roughly the same age. So I'm just curious what you're hearing about what it would take to pry Kadri out of Calgary.
I think it's a couple of things. Number one, the challenge I think for Nashville is the reason Kadri likes Calgary per se. Like, he played his 1,000th game this year, Adam, and he told people, like, they threw a big party for him after in his ceremony, as they always do. You guys just had it with Yossi, and they did a big party for him. And Kadri told them, like, you know, I really appreciate what you guys did here for me. And as a matter of fact, I think as a result, it took longer for his willingness to be traded to get out because he was so appreciative. I think Calgary's always known that it could come to this. The thing is, they really think, they'll do it, Adam. They'll trade him. I think that it would cost a good young player or two, like a draft pick. Like, if you had a good prospect and a good young player, or two of a good prospect, a good young player, or a reasonably high draft pick, I think Calgary would do it. I think the problem for the Predators doing it is, if you can't convince him that you're going to be better, like a Stanley Cup contender, I don't know how happy he's going to be.
Elliot Freeman has been our guest on D-Mace. Vingan and Donicky joins us every Thursday during hockey season, and he is presented by Old National Bank. Get old. Elliot, great stuff as always. We'll catch up next week.
Where's D-Maze today? Is it like a post-Christmas vacation?
No, I'm right here. I had a question for you. It wasn't really related. I guess it was related to hockey in a sense, but you know, I didn't know if you...
Go ahead.
Well, here's my question. And Lou, I know you heard about the Bill Belichick snubbing and everybody's in uproar. Has that... Because I don't know how hockey does their... Hall of Fame and, you know, voters and all that. Has there been a situation where... Everyone felt this person was a first ballot and they didn't get in. And was it such an uproar like this?
The Belichick
You know question. What? I'll give you, you know, it's a great question, D-Mace. And I'll tell you the one that it's not exact, but it is similar. So hockey has a committee and there's 18 people on the committee. And I'll say this, there's like retired players. I think there's a couple media members there. There's a couple women on the panel. Like, it's a qualified panel. The people there are more than qualified to judge, as far as I'm concerned, who deserves to be in the Hall of Fame or not. But it's a secret ballot, and it's mysterious. And, you know, and the other thing, too, is it's not obvious. Like, somebody on the panel has to nominate a person to go in the Hall of Fame. And then they have to vote in to accept him or her. And we don't even know oftentimes who gets nominated. So it's like things like this happen all the time. I remember the one that really upset a lot of people, Derek, was years ago. There was a coach by the name of Pat Burns. And he got sick. He had cancer. And there were people who wanted him to get in before he died, and he didn't. And then 4 years after he died in 2014, they put him in. And I remember that was one that really upset people. They were like, you were going to put him in. You knew you were going to put him in. How come you didn't do it while he was still alive? I remember that. That was one that I remember people being as angry as I can remember.
Derek, next time throw something at me if you want to ask a question.
That was a good question. You know, y'all had the hockey question, so
that was a good question. Elliot, thank you so much. We'll catch up next week.
All right, guys. Take care. Have a great week.
Yep, you too.
615-737-1025. Great stuff, as always, from our friend Elliot Freeman. Your reaction, 615-737-1025. We'll also get Willie's opinion on what he heard from Robert Saleh today. We'll do that next. 615-737-1025. We are broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning, Gain Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service.